So just to briefly review what we spoke about last time, virtually every major facet of life that shapes our experience, it's completely beyond our control. If you just think about time alone, that's basically a trump card. I mean, everything that we experience occurs in the context of time. And we can't control the time period in which we live, or when we were born, or when we die. And if we recognize that we are bound by time, we are not above time, that alone is enough to recognize that our scope of control is very narrow and very limited. Furthermore, we have a sense of security day to day, and it's basically false. We assume that Google is going to keep our information safe, and that our bank is going to keep our money safe, and that the police force is going to protect us. But every once in a while, it becomes apparent that things are not safe, either that information goes haywire, or banks, or sometimes governments as well. And when this occurs, a lot of people become very, well, understandably anxious, because they previously believed that they were secure, and now they feel panicked because they see that they're not safe. Spiritual connection is an antidote to that level of anxiety, because if we accept our lack of control before we lose it, and we learn to rely on God before we, well, need to, we can develop a spiritual connection with God, a relationship in our day-to-day life, and that serves as a resource that we can draw upon when things get out of our control. Recognizing our limited scope of control, therefore, is a step towards spiritual connection, because it can pull us into a relationship with God. And when we envision current situations that we're worried about, and we describe in detail, we go through what might happen if the situation were to go badly, and then we reach out to God in prayer for help, that is a way of not exerting control, but accepting our lack of control. And that is the goal of this exercise. And the exercise that we did last week, and a goal of that session. What I wanted to do now was introduce Spiritual Connections Part 2. Recognizing that we're not in control of life, that's the first step in spiritual connection, or one of the first steps. But in of itself, that's not enough to have intimacy and closeness with God. At each level, we've seen this, that it's not only about having an understanding of the other and a recognition of the other. It's about developing love. It's about developing a sense of relationship and closeness. Just because we recognize that God's in control doesn't mean that we're going to feel love for God or loved by God. So to have spiritual connection, there's another step that has to be taken, which is building gratitude, not just a sense that God is in control and that we're not, but a sense of gratitude towards God. The reason why is because gratitude creates a sense that we are loved by God, and that draws us into a relationship, a spiritual relationship of spiritual connection. Okay, so handout 13 discusses the issue of gratitude and spiritual connection. And how do we develop gratitude? So let's just say you find $5 on the street, a $5 bill. Are you going to have gratitude to the person who dropped it? So almost everybody will answer that question by saying, no, they didn't intend to give it to me, so I don't have gratitude. I might feel bad for them, and if I figured out who they were, I might even give it back to them. But I don't feel gratitude because they didn't intend. There was no intention. But what if I found out that somebody didn't drop that accidentally, that they actually placed it there, and they orchestrated events around me so that I would happen to pop by exactly when the bill was there, nobody else would touch it, and I was able to pick it up, and they were able to give me a gift. Let's say I found that out, theoretically, hypothetically. Would I have gratitude? Most people to that answer would say, of course, because somebody went to great lengths to give me a gift. So what's the fundamental difference between those two scenarios? The answer is the one had order and design and intentionality, and the other did not. The other was a fluke. The first scenario, finding $5, was just luckier draw and somebody else's bad luck. So there's no gratitude to feel. But the second scenario, there's a perception that there's order and there's design and there's something intentional. There's a perception that the situation was planned, that it had a purpose, that it was for you. So therefore, you feel gratitude, grateful to the one who bestowed the gift. So in other words, psychologically, when we perceive order and design, we have gratitude. And that in turn draws us into a sense of relationship and connection with the person who we feel grateful to. So all of this being the case, spiritual connection is a skill set. If we want, we can develop a relationship with God, a sense of loving relationship with God, by selectively attending to order and design in the world. That can pull us into gratitude, which can catapult us into a state of love. However, gratitude is a double-edged sword. It's a very powerful tool, extremely powerful tool for creating connection, because it draws us into relationships with ourselves, with others, and with God. But as soon as we feel grateful, there's another emotion, if we do it right anyway, there's another emotion that settles in, and that's an uncomfortable sensation, actually, instead of an uncomfortable emotion. It's called indebtedness. Now, indebtedness is not necessarily bad just because it's uncomfortable. It's potentially very good, in fact, because it's an indication that we're connected. If we recognize that we've received a gift from somebody and we feel loved by them, well then, typically there's a sense of indebtedness that we would like to repay the gift. We would like to repay the debt. So therefore, we can use that set of indebtedness, that sense of indebtedness, that sense of love and connection, to commit to take our relationship to the next step, to step things up a notch, and to do something for the other. In terms of spiritual connection, indebtedness can create a drive to identify and to fulfill God's will, to commit to using our unique talents for God, and to exert very serious efforts to push ourselves forward. That's going to be the next two sessions, kind of the last two sessions, except for the finale that we're going to do in the next couple of weeks. However, some people have the sense of indebtedness and they back out of spiritual connection because they, instead of using the indebtedness to motivate themselves and to push themselves forward, they instead get freaked out and they deny the gifts. They say, oh, the person didn't really give me that. They explain away the gifts. And in doing so, they take a step out of the world of connection. Needless to say, it's not an ideal approach. So we have to be aware there's this tendency to back out of relationships when we feel indebted and instead counteract that with, by being grateful recipients when we receive gifts and rededicate ourselves to a life of connection and to a life of relationship, in this case with God. So spiritual connection, part two, involves recognizing order and design in the world. And you can, I hope you can see where this is going, which is by recognizing order and design, we can have a sense of love, have a sense of gratitude, and that can catapult us into a set of, into a relationship with God. Now, in terms of spiritual connection, there are two primary areas that we can recognize order and design. There's nature, and then there's life events. Nature. So there was a contemporary Jewish thinker, his name is Rabbi Avigdor Miller, and he spoke a lot about design and nature. He had many, many classes, quite a prolific orator, lots of classes, even online, in fact, a lot of electronic classes. Once he has a famous class that he gave, it was a full hour class, maybe even longer, and he spoke about the features of an orange. I think actually the way he gave the class, he brought an orange into the class and he would, you know, had a knife and he at some point cut it open and went through it. And he looked about how the features of the orange indicate a designer. They indicate that God designed it for human enjoyment. Here are just 10 points. This is a condensed version of his class. He noted that until an orange is ripe on the tree, the color is green, and that matches the color of the tree. So, because the leaves are green. So it's actually not fully visible from a distance. And he said the reason is because it's not ready to be enjoyed. God didn't want it to be enjoyed yet. He wanted it to become more ready until it's enjoyable. Once the orange is ripe, though, it develops this bright color, and it's a direct contrast with the tree. You have this bright, well, orange fruit, which contrasts with the green, sometimes brown foliage. So it's clearly visible from the distance, So one can see, hey, there's an orange on that tree. I want to eat it. A ripe orange also has a pleasant fragrance, and it can provide enjoyment even before it's eaten. If you put it on your counter, if it's very fragrant, you might even smell it if you're sensitive enough to it. And that adds also to the experience of the taste. When you're tasting something and you smell it as well, there are actually oils in the skin of the orange, and sometimes they can even rub off on a person's hands. And many hours after they've eaten the orange, they have the scent of the orange that they can that they carry around with them because of the oils. Then he noted that the orange has thick skin and that most insects cannot get through the skin, most insects and many animals, but it's very easily removed by human hands. Sometimes you need a knife, but you can typically peel an orange and get through it, with your bare hands. And once you peel off the skin of the orange, it's really interesting. It has this protective layer. It cushions the soft fruit from the thick skin. Between the outer skin, which is a bit pungent, and the inside, which is this juicy, soft, sweet flesh, it has a protective layer to protect it against the oils, to protect the fruit that it is on the inside against the oils on the outside, and also to preserve all the edible parts to make sure that they're not damaged when you're peeling it. Rabbi Miller also noted that the inside layer of the skin, this is an interesting one, is colorless. It's odorless and it's also tasteless. Color stops at the rind because once a person's picked the orange, there's no point in wasting color. So it also has no scent, it has no taste because its function is simply to protect. The function isn't to lure you in, isn't to get you to eat it, isn't to get you to enjoy it. It really just has a protective effect, so it's not necessary. And then you look at the actual fruit. That's not odorless or tasteless, and it's not colorless either. It's bright orange, visually appealing. It looks very nice. And that enhances the way it tastes. There's a lot of psychological science even on the appearance of food and people enjoying it. Then the fruit is easily divided into bite-sized wedges, these little pieces. And you can take longer to enjoy it and to savor it. You can also, it's easy to share it with others. So it promotes people enjoying and sharing. And then within each wedge, you have these little membranes and this thousands of sacs, and they all have this juice. You know, there's this candy that kids have. It's called, I don't know what it's called. It's got like a liquid center. Gushers, that's what it's called. It's got a liquid center, and it's surrounded by candy, and you have a burst of flavor. So, you know, oranges are God's gushers. And then, though, the last point, it has bitter seeds, and those seeds encourage people to spit them out so that new plants will grow and that new oranges will grow and that more people will be able to enjoy them. That was a condensation of Rabbi Victor Miller's talk on seeing order and design just in one orange. And the idea, though, is that it's not simply taking time to enjoy beauty in nature. Spiritual connection is not only, oh, wow, that's a nice tree. It's seeing the design and the order in order to inspire a sense of gratitude. It's much deeper. Now, it's a good thing to stop and smell the flowers and to walk out in the sunshine and to take a time and enjoy nature. But spiritual connection is more. It's appreciating order and design and moving ourselves into a relationship with God by feeling grateful. Connecting to God doesn't only require stopping and observing. It means appreciating the wonderful, or the origin of the wonders in nature. And there's so many opportunities to do this by gazing into nature and engaging with nature. Every facet of our lives has some incredible opportunity for order and design if somebody stops and think about it. So those are all opportunities to have spiritual connection. And that can be done at any time, any point in time, anywhere we are, almost. The other way to see God's design and order in the world is through life events. This is a little bit harder. But recognizing order and design in nature is only one piece. There's recognizing order and design in life events. This is important because it involves perceiving God's involvement in our day-to-day experience. Again, it's harder than seeing order and design in nature for a bunch of reasons. First, we talked about this before. It's harder to see God's role when human action is involved, because we have this perception that human beings are, when we engage in efforts, that those have a direct effect. I think we'll see, I think we've seen actually from last week, how little our scope of control is. Nevertheless, the importance of engaging in effort, which we'll talk about in the next coming weeks, is also part of spiritual connection. But the more that human beings are involved, nevertheless, it's harder to see God's hand. But the second piece is that seeing all of life events as emanating from God, that's a higher level of gratitude and a much higher level of indebtedness. It's one thing to receive a tree or a fruit or even a basket of fruits, but there's a cap. Like, how indebted am I really going to be? You know, I guess I could have just choose not to have oranges again. I happen to like oranges, but I could do that. But if I recognize that God gave me my family, my health, my spirituality, my friends, my job, money, you know, and everything, and so many other things that I can't live without, then my level of indebtedness is going to go through the roof. And so is my level of gratitude. So seeing God's role in life events is a lot harder. And because the more we see God's hand, the more we realize that we're in very, very serious debt. But the most challenging aspect of seeing God's role in life events is that sometimes life events don't work out the way we want. Sometimes innocent people are harmed by accidents or disease. There's terrorism. Sometimes we see benefits accruing to people who seem like they're undeserving. And it's very hard to see order and design, a godly order and design in life events when hard things like that occur. So we have to try to discuss this topic. According to the connections paradigm, it's clear that human beings cannot fully understand why bad things happen to good people and why good things happen to bad people. So you're not going to get an answer to that question. There are a couple of reasons for the reason why we can't understand it. We talked about it previously, that spiritual connection involves relinquishing our false sense of control and recognizing that life runs according to a divine plan. It's just beyond our comprehension. So that's one aspect of it. Another piece, though, is that according to the connections paradigm, this world is only one stage, and a short stage, frankly, in human existence, and that there is true justice and reward and punishment, but those are in another state of existence, which is after death. I don't know what that looks like, but that certainly is clear. Now, we don't have time to venture into a whole discussion of the afterlife. For those who want to, there is a cool new book that just came out a couple of years ago. It's called The Afterlife, A Jewish View. It's by Jonathan Morgenstern. And there's another section, another text I'll direct you to. Rabbi Benjamin Blech has a book, pretty famous book, If God is Good, Why is the World So Bad? In chapter 7, he talks about life after death. And those are two really great sources. But bottom line is that human beings can't fully answer the question of why bad things happen to good people. But nevertheless, you know, I think we have to have some sort of a way of addressing these fundamental questions. Our answers are not going to be fully satisfactory, but they'll be partially satisfactory at best. And handout 13b discusses these. So there are a couple reasons why bad people could have good fortune. In fact, several reasons. One is it could be an opportunity for other people to build character or faith. Sometimes you have great people, wonderful people, who have to tolerate injustice and have faith that at the end of the day, things are going to work out okay, and hold on to that faith and get have an opportunity to draw close to God by holding on to that faith that God's running the show, even though in this world things are unjust. True reward and holding on to the idea and the concept that true reward and punishment are meted out in the afterlife, that is a test of faith for many people. So sometimes it's a great opportunity for everyone else. Sometimes also, people get a divine reward. It's for good deeds that they did. Sometimes people did one or two good things, even though, you know, they are essentially, you know, have many issues and are very complicated people. But they've done good things, and it's nice to that they get a reward. But according to the connections paradigm, it's actually a curse for a person to get a divine reward in this world. The reason why is because if we're rewarded here for something we did that's good, then it can deprive somebody of something they did in the afterlife. Now, of course, if somebody's receiving something positive in this world, it's not an indication that it's for sure a divine reward. As we'll see, it could be many other things. But it's not necessarily a good thing for somebody to be rewarded in this world. Sometimes also it is a reward, but not for something that they did, something that an ancestor did, something that a parent did, something that a grandparent did. And God can sometimes reward a child or grandchild for something that's not due to their credit, but due to somebody else. Sometimes, and this happens, I think, a lot, God is being very patient, that God will give somebody something, even though it's above their pay grade, it's above what they deserve, because they have an opportunity to contemplate to contemplate changing their ways, to contemplate repentance. And ultimately, when they do repent, they'll be in a position to use the gifts that they have for good. Sometimes also, bad, quote unquote, bad people will receive a good fortune because they will pay it forward to other people. For example, through charity. This is a known concept in Jewish thought, that sometimes people will receive gifts because they are will ultimately pay those forward and give those to other people, and it ends up being a benefit to those other people. And sometimes bad people experience good fortune because it's really not a good thing after all. Sometimes it's a curse in disguise. The Titanic comes to mind, how people were clamoring to get on the ship and it ended up being a huge curse. And there are other examples as well. Another scenario we should talk about is when good people experience bad fortune. So there's a lot of reasons potential for this. Again, none of these are ultimate answers because, as we said before, these are only partially satisfactory at best. Ultimately, we don't know. But nevertheless, good people can have a rough time because it's an opportunity to build character. There's tons of opportunities for resilience under stress that human beings have. Great opportunities to build character. And similarly, an opportunity to build faith in God. There are also some situations where people experience bad fortune as a consequence or some sort of a punishment for their actions. For example, if somebody grossly violates the laws of nature by doing something, frankly, that's foolish. A couple things come to mind. I don't know, smoking, driving without a seatbelt, going for a walk at the top of the Grand Canyon over the, you know, where there's no guardrail. Sometimes there are accidents that happen, and it's not that God's not in control, but people who grossly violate the laws of nature, those are taken very seriously from a spiritual level. Another thing is divine punishment for misdeeds. Now, just as it's not a good thing for people to be rewarded in this world for good deeds physically, it is a blessing for people to receive a divine punishment for their misdeeds in this world, because that preserves their ultimate reward in the afterlife. And another thing that could happen, just the final one, is that things really could be a blessing in disguise. There are many stories of people who received, quote unquote, bad fortune, and it was very clear 2, 3, 4, or 5 years later, sometimes longer, that whatever happened was a blessing in disguise. Okay, so in sum, developing a sense of not only God being in control, but a sense of God loving us and God doing things for us is integral to spiritual connection. There are two main areas in which we can do that. One is by seeing order and design in nature, and the other is by seeing order and design in life events. The latter is harder than the former. Since the latter is harder than the former, we're not going to work on it directly with an exercise, but I am going to introduce an exercise for seeing God's hand in nature. And as we discussed, spiritual connection goes beyond just having a perspective that God's in charge. The aim here is to feel that God loves us and acts in our best interests. And that requires gratitude, which is a palpable emotional recognition that God is blessing us. There are a lot of areas of life that we can have gratitude, but one that we can do on almost virtually every day is food. When we eat or drink, there's this huge opportunity to draw close to God if we want to, what we'll call taste the blessing, tasting the blessing in the food. Tasting the blessing involves not only enjoying food and taking the time to savor it, but to envision that God packed the food that we're eating with two things, nutrition and enjoyment. Nutrition being that which sustains us and helps us to live, and enjoyment something that we can have a positive experience from. Again, this is not just enjoying food. It's not just what's called mindful eating, which, again, is very good. It's not a bad thing, mindful eating. It's wonderful. But spiritual connection is another step. It's perceiving that God is nourishing us in a pleasant way when we eat. I do want to say that it is for sure inner disconnection to criticize our bodies for not tasting the blessing if we can't do this. We have to recognize where we're holding with this exercise and try to move a single step forward, not two, not three steps forward. If we do this once a day for a year, it will change your life. And the exercise is called Tasting the Blessing. Once per day, when you eat, try to feel that God placed nutrition and enjoyment in the food that you're eating just for you, that it was there specifically for you. The idea, the goal of that exercise is to feel gratitude to God and to be pulled into a relationship. And that is our exercise. So on our charts, we have whether we're tasting the blessing of the food every day, recognizing our limited scope of control once per day. That was the exercise from last week. And then from 2 weeks ago, relying on God during a simple activity, envisioning that life is a movie set and having a sense that we are not in control. And that is the end of session 13.